Alien Talk. Ein Kunstpodcast von Melvin Wiebeke und Jörg Heikhaus. Special Edition. Landpartie.
Hallo Melvin.
Hallo Jörg.
So, wir haben es endlich mal wieder geschafft, diesen Podcast aufzunehmen. Hat ein bisschen länger gedauert. Ich glaube, wann war das jetzt mal? Februar, März?
Februar war das. Und interessanterweise immer das erste Mal nicht face-to-face, ne?
Nee, wir sitzen an unterschiedlichen Orten.
Ja.
Aber ist ja auch gut so, weil sonst kriegen wir es ja gar nicht hin, wenn wir darauf hoffen, dass wir mal irgendwann nebeneinander sitzen und aufnehmen können. Ne? So.
Ja, das stimmt.
Der Plan war ja oder ist ja nach wie vor, einen Podcast, jeweils eine Folge aufzunehmen zur Landpartie mit allen beteiligten Künstlerinnen. Und den Anfang haben wir heute gemacht mit Lolita Pilgrim.
Mhm.
Der Podcast ist auf Englisch. Du hast schon reingehört.
Das ist schon mal. Ich habe schon reingehört. Ich fand es sehr spannend. Ich freue mich, dass du so eine spannende Persönlichkeit dir eingeladen hast für die Landpartie. Ja, also war ja deine Entdeckung, ne?
Ja, danke.
Ja. Und ja, ich glaube, die BesucherInnen werden sich freuen auf ihre großen Bilder.
Auf jeden Fall. Ich habe schon gesehen, was kommt und das wird gut. Lolita ist gebürtige Litauerin und sie erzählt gleich zu Anfang, wie sie von ihrem Kunststudium in Vilnius über das Töpfern zur Malerei in Kopenhagen gekommen ist. Damit legen wir gleich los, ne? So, sag mal, here we go, ne?
Here we go.
It started from, you know, when I was 6 years old with art schools and like all the way through finishing school and then art academy. And then I was doing ceramics, actually, not painting. And then I came to Denmark because of my ex-husband, because we were just married, but he was Lithuanian. So I followed him, as you do when you're just married. And then I started to do some crappy jobs here as an immigrant. But then very quickly I started to draw and paint. And also because I didn't have my kilns, you know, I didn't have my studio. And that's what was available. And then very quickly I found the studio and did my dream, because I always wanted to paint. But then in Lithuania I was completely possessed by ceramics. I was doing it 7 days a week. I was I had like few girls working for me. It was like little factory, you know, so there was not much freedom in that, even though I created that myself. But Denmark just started to roll after a few years. I've been here for 14 years now. So yeah, it's I say it's like my little miracle, Denmark, because I can paint.
So painting similar a little bit to what you were doing in ceramics and got to the
at the beginning,
aesthetics.
Yeah, it was at the beginning it was very graphic in a way.
Yeah.
Like two-dimensional. And then it, you know how it goes when you do something, you evolve. And then I'm here now because of this evolvement. And but I'm still painting very thick.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but it's very textural. And I think it's because of ceramics.
I haven't yet seen an original of your work, but as much as I can tell from afar, and you're very active in terms of posting from your studio, so that's always a good way to actually see what you're doing. So, and then you can see it's pastels, it's like there's layers and there's a thickness to it. It's almost like a creamy feel, you know, to your work. And have you always worked with oil? Because only oil can do this, probably.
Not in art academy. I couldn't afford that, obviously. But when I was a kid, my grandpa had a lot of like old oil paints that I would steal because he was not using it. And I would paint on like the backs of the back of the door of like there was a cupboard where I would take out the door and I would paint when I was kid, teenager, but nobody noticed. So I learned a little bit how it feels, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, and I started that very early. The stealing paint part. I kind of taught myself that's the feeling I really like. And I think it's also all the books I've read, Impressionist, Expressionist, the real deal is in the oil paint.
Yeah.
It's romanticizing, but yeah.
I also had paints, oil paints from my grandfather, who was not my real grandfather, but was, say, the husband of my grandma, who was a painter, not as a professional painter. He was actually a painter and decorator, so he was painting walls. But he had, in his spare time, he painted, like, flowers and, you know, stuff from where he was on vacation. And I discovered these after he was dead. And so I took all these paints, even though my grandmother didn't want me to have them because she wanted to keep everything of his. So I took them. So I tried to work with these paints. And I think it has a, it is very romantic to paint with oil paints, but it requires a lot of patience, which I actually never had, definitely not at that age. Maybe today. Yeah, today. Yeah.
So might come back, no?
No, the thing is with my technique with the carving, it only works with acrylics. If I have to wait for the oil to dry and then start carving, there's too long a gap between. And I've actually never carved through oil into wood, so that would be an experiment, of course. You know, maybe at some point. But this is not about me; it's about you. So oil, but I love the medium. You know, I love the medium. I have a friend; he's Victor Castillo, is an artist that I've been showing with a long time, and we always spoke about oil. And now he paints in oil, and I think even though his paintings were super impressive, it's now there's a strength to it. You know, as you just said, like the texture and everything, and So you're probably working on several works at the same time for drying phases. So how do you deal with the patients, or you just go in and?
No, I mainly work with one piece because I cannot. I think about it. Like yesterday, I started something. I already looked in the evening when I came home before bed. I looked today in the morning. I'm starting to sketch on the photo. You know, color palettes. I cannot have two things at once. Sadly. Okay. But I paint very thick, you know, it's like the kind of impasto. And I also carve. You carve it, but me too. I have, you know, layer underneath. Let's say yellow, light yellow, and then I put, you know, titanium white and I carve it out.
Ah, okay.
So that yellow comes out.
So with a chisel then also?
No, with like a really worn out brush, or cut the brush and use, you know, sandpaper.
Okay, it's a very interesting process. Yeah,
you'll see it when you see the paintings.
Yeah, I can't wait. So when you got the invitation to the Lampeti from somebody you didn't know, do you want to come and show your work in a village somewhere in the remote northern Germany? What were your first thoughts on that?
First was I checked who you are, obviously, and I thought, okay, I like his works. And this year, I've had a yes hat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not next year, but this year, it's been...
So that's something that you tell yourself at the beginning of the year, this year I have a yes hat on?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
and things has happened actually because of this yes hat.
Yeah, okay. So I'm lucky, like, I guess. Yeah. So if I would have asked you next year, you probably wouldn't have come.
Maybe not. You know, I mean, I already said no to some things because first half a year became quite big with plans and everything. So it's sometimes good to do that.
Yeah. I think as an artist, you have to learn to say no, but also figure out what's a right decision, you know.
And if it resonates with you, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to have a good feeling about it, but also you always have to think in the back of your head, is this maybe an exhibition I put too much effort in and I don't gain anything, and by gaining I don't mean not necessarily financially, but I also mean this is something that that continues to develop me, or you know, something like that. Personally, the Lampeti was a spontaneous project last year that I started when I was restoring this old house in the countryside. I met so many people and I told them, and they always asked what I'm doing, and I said I'm an artist, and it's, you know, pretty abstract. Maybe it's different in the city, but especially in the countryside. So, and explaining your work is, you know, we're trying now as well, you know, with your work, it's always very difficult if you don't really see the work or stand in front of it. And so I thought it probably would be a good idea to get a lot of my work together from past years and have a nice event, and, you know, with barbecue and coffee and cake and beer on tap, and, you know, in a nice place, not a very typical gallery environment, and just show it. And it worked so well because, it's a very, sympathetic kind of a show. It's very authentic, but it's not a gallery, you know. It's not, we're not coming from the city and telling country folks how art has to be experienced or whatever. I think if you have a white cube in the countryside, then you probably attract a couple of collectors from the city surrounding it, but you don't reach the people who live there actually. And that was such a nice feeling, and I have such a good understanding that I thought I'd repeat it, but not alone, but invite a couple of people that I think could be really interesting to experience together.
I think you're brave.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a brave project.
Yeah. It's a fun project too. You know, I've done exhibitions for a long time, and then I stopped because I didn't want to do that anymore. But in this different environment, it's really nice. Like last weekend, there was a flea market in the village where we're holding it, which is like, I don't know, 1,000 meters away from my house. And I put a couple of flyers and posters in a backpack on my bike, and I drove around, and, you know, sort of, it was like, so like when I started out doing shows, like in Hamburg, at least, and in the early 2000s, that was what I was doing to promote shows. I was walking around to the bars in the neighborhood and delivering flyers, printed stuff, you know, printed, which today, but there it really works very well and people really embrace it. And it's also, of course, there's coming people from the cities surrounding and from Hamburg to the opening, but it has a really good feeling about it. And of course, you know, we come to that later, but I mean, the visibility through social media and through online and through newsletters is really good. And so like tomorrow, for example, I have a television at the house.
Wow.
Very, very important, like local regional, station, and they come and make a feature about the exhibition up there. And that will be screened in the whole state of Schleswig-Holstein. So it seems to hit a nerve, you know?
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
It sounds like you know what you're doing. Or it's working. I don't know. I mean, you
I don't know. Experience. I mean, I could give that back. I mean, you're an artist now, an experienced artist for so many years. You studied, you've been working for, I don't know, 14 years as an artist, but it's always, things have to come together as well. You can't plan everything, you know. People could also not be interested in this, or you're basically the wild card of the whole show. Because all the other artists I know, except for Peter Birk, I've never shown him. But I met him. I know his work. I had him in a group exhibition once, because I think he fits perfectly with his work into this environment. And Rasmus Rinhag is a friend, you know, that Melvin has already shown a couple of times, and working closely with Stephanie Rau. She's a good friend here from Hamburg, and she has been showing with Melvin for several years. My friend Mario Kleinschmidt, who lives in the village, we actually shared, we didn't share, but our studios, in 2002, we moved in a building where our studios were basically next door. So that's where we fell in love, artistically and as friends, you know. So, and I had an exhibition with him many, many years ago. The wild card thing. Let's get back to that. I don't know whether it's the right term. I mean, we're both not native English speakers, so I hope we can agree that I mean it in a very positive way. I was just kind of looking around. I just stumbled across your paintings, and I thought that this is something very unique that I haven't seen, the way you work on it. And now you've also already explained that you're also carving into the oil pen. So how do you think you develop this very kind of unique painting style? And you know, sort of like, are you capturing moments? Are you more like a storyteller? So what is the backbone of your?
So the backbone.
Yeah, difficult
for me. Yeah, no, many questions.
Yeah.
So the way I work, I usually work from photos.
Mm-hmm.
I either catch someone in the street, in the bar, or I do photo shoot. For example, today I'm going to go and take photos,
mm-hmm.
Of a mother and a daughter.
Right.
And it's my friend, and it's her 13-year-old daughter. And I have already questions. I was just writing before we started this conversation, because I want to get like their connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I will record that. I don't know if I'll ever use this. And then I already made a setup with, I bought some ribbons, some other things. I have an idea. I don't know how it's going to work out, you know,
mm-hmm.
because for me, I don't have any children, not planning to have, but I have a mother, obviously. That is, yeah, our relationship is a little bit weird. But that's why I think this talks to me, you know. So I'd like to do this series. But so this was just an example. But the point is, I take photos of people. And then I paint them, but it's not, the point is not the person, it's the silhouette, it's maybe the face, and whatever happens after, it's my imagination. So I need a form that I fill in, but I'd never really know. When I start something, I have an idea, a visual, what happens, I have no idea. You know, I have an idea, but I can plan it, but it's through the process. But I always have a photo. If it's not a photo, it's too abstract and I don't like it. I get lost. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I have some sort of OCD, but I get lost. It's uncomfortable. I need to have that form. Maybe I'll get out of it in the future. But this has helped me to come where I am, I think.
And it's like, always people in your... I mean, it's the human form that's also interesting to you, and the characters on... probably
absolutely. So, I mean, I think people.
So you're not painting landscapes or houses, or
no? I think it's. I live in the. I'm a city. You know, I grew up in the city. I was born in the middle of the city center. I was exposed to nature, but still, city has been always my home. So, and I live in the city center of Copenhagen.
Yeah.
That's what interests me, but that's what surrounds me. So, yeah, I have sometimes themes. It's like, you know, just bars, people from bars, the emotion, how they sit. I'm, you know, it's like hunting. I do city hunting and then I do setups. And then things happen on the canvas.
You know that painters like Leonardo da Vinci and stuff like that, they went through the cities to look for people they could use as models in their painting. Are you looking for a moment or a certain expression or a certain personality, like this mother and child now? You already have plans what you're looking for?
Sometimes like that, but in the city, I see something like visual. You know, in Copenhagen, there's always, like now, there's going to be jazz festival, there's photo festival, that was just 3 days of design. So there's always festivals, music, so it means people sit, drink, chill, dress up. So I walk in the street and I see something and I'm like, I get completely, you know, sucked into that. Then I either go and ask, can I take a photo? But then the moment is gone. Yeah. Or I take the photo and I come to the person. I say, I just did that. Is that okay? Yes. Thank you. Or I plan, but I also realize that for me, it has to be somehow aesthetic, you know, like I fight with that. It always has to be somehow visually pleasing. I don't know where it comes from. Probably a old school art academy in the way, you know, because I finished in 2008, so it's been a while. I think now it has changed I'm not gonna go there because I don't know.
I don't know. I never went to university, so I wouldn't even know. Things change, but I meet a lot of, you know, people who went, so, and they tell me their stories, so how they were educated. So was it a pretty formal education as well in Lithuania? So like, what was it? I mean, today I think here in Hamburg, the we have classes with switching the topic now, but still, I mean, you have classes who are run by more or less well-known famous artists, and then people are pretty free to roam around in those classes and get kind of different directions, but they don't learn how to draw or to paint or to do ceramics. That's so an approach.
It was other way around.
Yeah.
It was really like, you know, there's three times a week painting for 5 hours every time, or 3 hours. There's a naked model. You have to sit, you have to make a sculpture. It was really old school. It was the same teachers. So I think that's where it comes from. You know, it's like my army. That kind of broke me in a way. I have nothing against it, but I can see sometimes that I cannot let it completely loose, you know? Yeah. I'm trying. Slowly getting there, maybe. I don't know.
Or are you Are you very critical of your work when you do it? I mean, are you
repainting? Aren't we all?
Old painting, throwing away? Yeah, but it can also be a very personal criticism, you know. But yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, it's yeah. I mean, I don't know. In my process, sometimes it takes a long time until I really get along with the work I'm doing, because only like in the second stage of the painting or of the work, the carving itself, is where I can finally see if the ideas that I had in the beginning, if they will work or not. It's difficult kind of to plan and be happy immediately when I start. So it's always, it's always a process. Are you so critical? Are there paintings that you say these are so bad I don't want anyone to see them?
Clean them. I can work for 2 weeks or a week. Usually I feel it in a few days. If it's actually even first day, if it's going or not, or if it's been between, I continue. And I can sometimes clean 2 weeks, it's hardcore. Then I get depressed. But a week's work, 5 days work, I just clean it. If I can't, you know, I don't see the point continuing.
Mm-hmm. So you clean it, you repaint it, or paint over it, or
I just clean everything, like take down the paint and.
Ah, okay. Oh, yeah, that's So you have mountains of pastels, oil paint, drying. I like the smell of oil paintings. Yeah, waste. You know. Yeah. So on the photos that you sent me, you have your overall, your painting work clothes. They are like painting themselves.
Uniform.
That's pretty good. So what can we expect from you at the Land Party? I mean, I've seen what you've sent me so far, and I mean, and I really like it. I'm really looking forward to it. Is that from a specific series or from a certain period, or is that how did you? I mean, because when you do an exhibition, I mean, I'm figuring you do the same. You just don't look around and see what's lying around that you can, you know. So, but it's also like you think how works might correspond with each other.
Yeah, I've sent you two different. It's like I have two fights happening with me. It's a little bit one more is a little bit graphic, and another one is more graphic in the sense where I carve out. It's like I play with textures.
Yeah,
more, I don't know, to the ceramic side. Another one is more clean. I don't know how to explain, but you'll see it's visually, it's two different languages. And I thought I would, because since it's group exhibition, I think it would be nice to show my two sides.
It's a good approach, especially regarding like group exhibitions. I think the variety of difficult word, variety of artists and work that we have is, I think it's quite good. You know, it's quite a good mixture. It's also not just only. It's not just painting. It's sculpture. It's installation and woodcut. And you know, so I think it's gonna work really nicely. So yeah, well, we'll talk about that a bit more, not on a podcast, but in person when you know we start installing the walls and we chat about what do you think is different today for young artists when they begin their career? As an artist with experience, you know, building a career is not something you can actually plan. You know, I ask you this a lot of the podcast I've been doing for so many years. The majority of people listening to this podcast is not very rich collectors who want to buy work and want to understand us first. It's usually fellow painters, fellow artists, and they are curious because not everyone is exposed to this kind of exhibitions, this kind of communities. I mean, you're in Copenhagen. I mean, I know a lot of artists in Copenhagen. Fantastic community for artists, you know, but the village may not be a small town.
I think I'm also going to sound old school, but I think it's showing up. It's like going to studio, to your workplace, it's like going to gym, you know. You got to build up a muscle.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. You cannot just paint when you paint or do sculptures or whatever you're doing when you feel like. I know that there's days, but you still got to show up. That's, for me, I think it's the only way to become somebody. It's to produce work and have reflection on it. And I think if you're, I don't know, you move to Denmark or to Hamburg or, you know, Berlin, find a place where there's other artists. I think that's, for me, that was a way in, you know. I came here, I didn't know anyone. It's like I had to completely rebuild everything. So also the form of art to rebuild. So what I did, I went to like a collective. I'm still in the studio where I share space, also because it's cheaper, but it's nice people that I share space with and like-minded, and you know, I think that's the advice I would give. Build up the muscle and find people, like-minded people.
I like the image of going to the gym, you know, showing up and work. Because it has, of course, to do with the more you work, the more experience you become. I think I'm that old now that I can still learn new techniques and everything and can still improve. But I basically, I know what I'm doing, so I'm not scared at all. That's something that I've built up for myself, you know, through going to my gym and to making experiences and stuff. And you have galleries that you're working with closely now, or that you have been working with in the past.
It's mainly that one gallery in Copenhagen, Christopher Egerlund.
Yeah, she's a good one.
I'm gonna have next year, mid-March, mid-April solo show. So you're very welcome to come. That's what I'm already starting to prepare for.
Okay.
Because it's a quite big gallery. It's gonna be my biggest one.
Yeah, I do that. What podcast hosts always say, we'll put the links to all these things into the show notes. No, but at Christoph Egerlund, I know the gallery. I've been there once. I've worked in Copenhagen once for a couple of months on a hotel project with artists in 2005. It was called Hotel Fox. We turned a 3-star hotel into a hotel with 61 rooms with over 21 artists from around the world. Wow. This was a time when this concept of artist design hotels started, and it stopped. I think there are not many, you know, hotels that compared to that, because maintaining them is too expensive. You know, like you have an artist and give you a room in a hotel and you design it like you want it, and it's definitely not going to be according to regulations and standards. So, you know, things might fall apart after a few years, or people who go to the hotel room don't like it because the sink is upside down, whatever, you know.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, that was a good project.
You go for an experience, not just
So so I know a little bit of Copenhagen. I love to come to Copenhagen. It's a beautiful city, and
please do.
We also exhibited with the gallery when Helium Cover was still doing fairs. We went to the predecessor of the Enter Art Fair, the Copenhagen Art Fair at that time, when they opened their doors for international galleries. They were always just like for Scandinavian or Danish galleries, and then we were one of the first galleries they invited to show in Copenhagen. Just basically the 2 years before they turned into Enter Art Fair, and that's also a really good fair. I like that one. It has a good atmosphere. And so I know the gallery scene in Copenhagen a little bit. I think it's really, really strong. I think it's a good place for artists to go. I'm not sure about being able to live there because it's so expensive. But okay, that's something artists also have to figure out for themselves, how to survive.
Well, I can tell you, first, I have no kids. We live in a very small home that is cheap. A studio I share. That's the recipe.
Yeah.
And all the money I spend on materials and traveling. So zero in the bank, but happy.
Yeah, the thing is also, as an artist, you don't necessarily can think in those terms of regular income and being secure when you're old. And I'm pretty sure you can paint until you fall off the stool, because it will be something that keeps you alive. In a way, you
know? That's I never want to go to pension. You know, I've been talking to my boyfriend. It's not my goal. Never was.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that concept in general.
Yeah, I think, but with the show at Christopher Egerlund, I think that's a good start into becoming a little bit more independent. That's probably more or less my final question directed at you, the traditional gallery model that most artists are, or at least artists that can live off their art or just only live off their art, are still dependent on the traditional gallery system, but that is kind of questioned a lot these past years through social media coming up and now online sales. A couple of years ago, online sales was a big thing, and now I just learned that online sales are actually going back. People are needed to stand in front of the work. So what do you think? Could you as an artist survive without this gallery model? I mean, is there a different path now that we have all these channels, all the social media, all these weapons at our disposal?
Maybe, but then you have to be everything. You have to do then absolutely everything. You have to do the promo. You have to organize your own galleries, exhibitions. Mm-hmm. And I still think it's very important to have a gallery that represents you. I am a one-woman band, but it's amazing that, like, you can take over, you know, an exhibit and take your share and part in that. And I have no problem with that. Because you cannot, like, then you burn, I think it's burnout if you're going to do everything on your own.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I did both for a couple of years. Quite successful, at least in terms of the gallery. And the more successful the gallery became, the less successful. No, that's not true. I actually have quite good galleries representing me outside of that space. But it's very difficult, and it takes a lot of power off. And I think it's if you have a good relationship with somebody with a gallery that shows you, I still think that is probably the best way to go. You know, it's the thing is the business model is a model of trust, and that can change quickly. But I also see in a lot of artists today that they trust that they can gain the same, I don't know how to call it, but it's a liberty if you have somebody else doing this for you. You know, I've experienced now with this exhibition now that boosted it up to six artists, and it becomes like a show where I enjoy being seen as the curator and not as the gallery behind it. The gallery behind it is basically Melvin's gallery, though he's a little bit minimized through his injury, but he, of course, you know, does that part of the show. But it's not easy, and I think most artists will neglect their work and what they're actually wanting to achieve and through their art when they have to do all the other things. And I don't know how you're actually handling social media really nicely. It always looks pretty relaxed and, like, you know, so it's something that you just do, but don't overthink it. So you have your own strategy for social media? What's your strategy for social media?
Not really. I don't know. For example, now I'm going to have that exhibition coming. Mm-hmm. I also feel like I shouldn't show all my works because usually I paint something and then I show it. Mm-hmm. You know, but I'm thinking maybe not to do it, to create a little bit of anticipation, maybe show a little bit. So I have to change the strategy because, of course, when you see a painting on Instagram, it's not the same when you see it in the gallery.
Yeah,
and I also work with this company called Paper Collective. They do prints. Mm-hmm. It's like unlimited,
and I also no editions. But yeah.
No editions. And I was really like, I don't think it's really good for an artist not to do it. But then I thought, do you know what? When you go to, for example, Museum of Van Gogh, he hasn't earned anything from socks that is with his paintings and tote bags. I'm like, why should I could do that, you know, not specifically that, but for me, it's also a promotion because I get emails from Mexico, Edinburgh. I just bought your poster. So a lot of people cannot pay for original because it's, you know, 10 times more.
Yeah.
But that's exposure also. And like last week, they invited me for 3 days of design for a live painting. Mm-hmm. I've never done that in my life. I was sweating as hell. It was only 3 hours. Everybody was going around drinking champagne. There's different things around on the walls and me painting something. Mm-hmm. I was exhausted. I felt like I worked 10 hours in the restaurant, you know.
Yeah.
But that's also exposure. That's...
Yeah.
That's a promotion, and that's my yes hat also, still from this year. So, but it was a great experience. I don't think I want to do it ever again, because that's not my format, but I tried it. So, yeah, that's, what's the word? Not just a Danish word, it's kind of, this is me going out of the white cube, you know. Also exhibiting with you, that's also saying yes to a much bigger audience, to different possibilities, just broadening. I cannot find words today, sorry.
Say it in Danish and we translate less. Probably have also a lot of Danish listeners to this podcast because it's in English and we have so many Danish artists that we work with. And the area where the exhibition is, it was part of Denmark for a very long time. Yeah, so there's still people who speak Danish up there.
Really?
So, yeah, yeah, yeah. They actually even Danish schools. And it's like 30 kilometers from the Danish border. So I don't want these things to get too long. There's no time restraint, of course, on this, but I personally have the feeling that if the podcast is around 30, 35 minutes, it's good listening time.
I agree.
And I'm really happy that you are taking part in the exhibition and also that you agreed to do this podcast. And I can't wait to see your work. And thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.